All right, everyone, we're going to get started now. It's 8:46. I want to welcome one and all to the Fall 2009 Guide Dog Users of California Business Meeting. I'm Ann Kaiser, your president, for the next couple of months anyway. We are going to be having elections, and as you know, my term, I'm terming out, so we will be electing a new president, secretary, and one board seat. And depending on who gets those positions, we could be doing some more flip-flopping like we sometimes do. So with that, I'm going to have two wireless mics here, and I'm going to see if I can get someone to start passing these around, and we'll do brief introductions. And we will start here at the head table, and I will pass it around, starting to my left.
Ooh, I hope that wasn't a cup of coffee in there. This is Jerry Arakawa, your vice president.
Dan Kaiser, secretary, with my 10-year-old dog, Hilly. And this will be the last meeting she'll be attending. She'll be retiring in ever bliss.
And this is Mary Beth Randall, your treasurer, and I'm here with Tennyson.
My name is Charlene Ornelas. I have a 6-year-old golden retriever black lab mix from Guide Dogs of America.
I'm Diane Deutsch from Tehachapi. I have a 2.5-year-old red lab from Guide Dogs for the Blind in Oregon. Female.
I'm Penny Valdivinos. I have a 6-year-old golden retriever from the CNI, and I'm from Bakersfield.
I'm Michael Moore. I live in Oakland, California. I am also representing Guiding Eyes for the Blind, and I'm here with my 2-year-old dog, Cable.
Hi, I'm Linda Hawes. I'm from Guide Dogs of America. I'm one of the instructors.
Hi, I'm Chuck Jordan from Guide Dogs of America. And good to be here. Good to see everybody.
Hey, pleasant good morning, everybody. This is Mark Oswald with my 5th guide dog, Wendy, from GDA. She's 3 years old now, and this is her first convention.
Good morning, everyone. My name is David Jackson, and I'm here with Rolo. He'll be 3 years old in January, and I'm the school that I went to was Guide Dogs for the Blind.
My name is Glenda Castle, San Diego chapter delegate, and I have a cane, but I hope to get a dog.
And I'm Preston Moses from Alameda chapter, and I'm just here because I'm just for interest, just to find out what is happening here, just for the interests.
Well, welcome. Great.
And I'm Peter Crockwell from Alameda chapter. They're like Preston, just here to observe.
I'm Daryl Wilkerson from Alameda chapter. And I hope to get another guide dog.
Good morning. My name is Linda Samulski. I'm from Palm Springs. Today I'm representing Guide Dogs of the Desert. I do have Buster. However, I didn't bring him. I have Whitey this morning. Buster's in the backyard frolicking with my retired guide, as well as my husband, who is their daddy, watching over them. And we're here on a turnaround trip, so I just decided to leave Buster with Lexus and the daddy.
Good morning. Good morning, everyone. My name is Lorraine Foster. I'm here with my second guide, Skip. He's a 3-year-old from the Oregon campus of Guide Dogs for the Blind.
Good morning, I'm Linda Fonseca, and I'm here with my guide dog, Norman, and I have him for the high water mark, 3.5 years, so I'm counting, so far he's so good. Hi.
I am Pat LaFrance-Wolf. I'm membership chair, and I'll be getting a new dog on November 30th from GDA, my 4th dog.
Good morning, everybody. This is Nellie Emerson, and I am here with Wicker, a female German Shepherd from Seeing Eye, and she's almost 7 years old.
Hi, I'm Janine, and I'm here with my second guide, Rosemarie.
Good morning. I'm Nancy Younger, and I have Nigel, like Laguna Nigel, from Guide Dogs of the Desert. He'll be 4 years old on the 1st of January. He's a golden yellow lab. Thank you.
I'm Tom Scott. I'm vice president of the State Guide Dog Board.
I'm Tony Candela, representing the Department of Rehabilitation on the Guide Dog Board, and I'm the secretary for the Guide Dog Board.
Good morning. I'm Pamela Metz. I am one of the board members on the GDUC board, and I have female black lab maiden, second dog.
I'm Debbie Flowers. I am also on the board. I have a yellow lab, Markham, who just turned 6 years old, and he is my third dog.
Hello, my name is Monique McCorley, and I'm from the San Diego Braille Club chapter. I have a seeing white, seeing eye cane.
Hi, I'm Ken Metz, and I'm temporarily using my dog and a half named Jackson. Oh, it's a cane, by the way.
Excellent. Actually, I have a mic here, so that can float. Can everybody hear me? This one seems a little bit lower. All right. As I mentioned before, I'm Ann Kaiser, your president. I will be your president for another 2 months, and I am here with my fourth guide, Black Lab, female Black Lab Daytona from GDB San Rafael campus, and she is 7 years old now, which is almost impossible to believe. All right, let's go ahead and get started with our business here. Turn the mic over to our secretary, Dan Kaiser, is going to read the minutes from the spring and the last conference call. So take it away, Dan.
Okay, and just to do what Ann would ordinarily do, but you know, if you know people who'd be interested, go out in the hall column. We're going to have a really good discussion on the future of the California State Board of Guide Dogs, and we've got hopefully we've got our pro and con, and Frank Welty, our CCB Director of Advocacy and Governmental Affairs, is going to moderate the discussion, so that should be exciting. Here are the minutes for April 4th. And I don't have a stand, so I'm going to read Braille with one finger. 2009, President Ann Kaiser called the meeting. This was at our last live business meeting at the last convention. Ann Kaiser called the meeting together at 8:45 a.m. Dan read the minutes, and they were approved. Lee reported on the Quiet Car Seminar on March 7th in San Diego, a discussion of the Blue Line trolley tragedy ensued. The discussion took place, and Lee stated that Keith Tomlinson of Guide Dogs for the Blind had suggested that there be an addition of some audible devices that they could, you know, hopefully save lives on that line. Mary Beth gave her treasurer's report, and she reported that there were deposits of $12.57 in the account, and the total expenses were $967.02, with a total balance in the account of $3,669.02. Obviously, the economy has impacted Gaduck. Senate Bill 475 by Padilla. Thank you. I put OW in there. Padilla would amend the Business and Professions Code, Section 7200.7, by raising fees per graduate from 0.004 to 0.005. The increase is needed to boost the reserves for an extra 6 months. They would run out of money if they didn't do that. Antoinette Sorek read the State Board of Guide Dogs letter of support to the Senate Committee on Business and Professions in the State Senate, which would be held. The hearing would be on April 20th, 2009, and CCB, GDUC took a support position on that issue. Tony Candela of the Department of Rehabilitation discussed, and also the Secretary of the State Guide Dog Board discussed, the out-of-state instructor issue. Dan spoke on the duplicative services aspect of the existing board. That's the State Board of Guide Dogs. I should clarify that. And Lee discussed the consumer, or Lee discussed consumer involvement in the State Guide Dog Board. Ken Metz moved that the fall program include a discussion on the future of the California State Board. Thank you. On the California State Board of Guide Dogs. Dan abstained on the vote, but the vote passed. GDUC membership voted voted to support SB 475. Okay, I can delete that because I already mentioned that. Elections of delegates to the national convention took place, and the fee agreed upon was $400 per delegate. That was for last year's national. Ken and Mary Beth were elected as delegates. The meeting was adjourned at 10 a.m. Respectfully submitted, Dan Kaiser, your secretary.
Okay. Are there any corrections or amendments or discussion of these minutes? Do I hear a move to approve?
So moved.
Great. A move and second. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Excellent. Okay, let's...
I got him here. I had $15,000 worth of Braille notes to choose from, so... Okay, here's the GDUC minutes of October 22nd, 2009. Ann Kaiser called the this is a teleconference call. Ann Kaiser called the meeting together to order at 7:35 p.m. The convention in Fresno was the focus of this conference call. We first discussed the panel on the future of the California State Board of Guide Dogs. Dan updated everyone on the format that the moderator will be using for this discussion. CCB Advocacy and Governmental Affairs Director Frank Welty will be the moderator. Mary Beth Randall then discussed the convention volunteers. She has two puppy clubs, puppy raiser clubs, helping out. Dan reported on the website and the GDUC website and the fact that the ACB server has crashed, so there is no forward movement at this time on the development of the website. Jerry Arakawa gave his nominations report. It was felt that AAIDP, I think I have that right, IAA, I will make that, let me do that right now. IAADP should present at our next business speaker meeting. The meeting was adjourned at 8:13 p.m. Respectfully submitted, Dan Kaiser. I told you they were short minutes.
Thank you. All right. Any corrections, amendments to to these minutes? Do you move to accept? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Excellent. All right. Let me turn it over to Mary Beth for a treasurer's report.
All right. Good morning, everybody. Okay. As you heard in our treasurer's report at our spring convention, our beginning balance then was $3,600. You know, I would love it if it was the other way around. Thank you very much. So $3,669.02. we had a total amount of expenditures of $1,325.22. And then our total amount of deposits for the period was $646 even. And so that brings our current balance to $2,944.79. And actually, I think I need to correct my own numbers because, something like that. Yeah, I'm seeing right now that something's not right. I know why. Because of one of our expenditures was an amount of $139.22. And so that's where my numbers are not adding up correctly in my brain. So that, unless you would like to hear more about our expenditures and our deposits, that is the report that I have. And I do have a couple of treasurer things after.
All right. Any corrections, amendments, discussion of the treasurer's report? Right, move in second. All those in favor say aye. Opposed? Abstentions? Excellent. Let me go ahead and hand it back to you for your rest of your report.
Okay. Just real quick for everybody. If you have not been to the exhibit hall, I would love it if you would all hot foot it after the business meeting and in between the program and after the program and all that good stuff. If you are going to renew your dues for 2010, you can do that at our GDUC booth. And the dues, again, will be $20 for 2010. And also, at the table, we still have our shirts and we have our 50-50 raffle. So go buy tickets and spend good money. The other thing I was also going to just say is how much it's been a pleasure to, well, and I work with this group here in town since I live here, but it's been a pleasure to work with the Farsighted Puppy Raisers. And I have to apologize to Mary Flynn because I don't remember the name of her club. But Mary Flynn is the president of the other puppy raising club that's also in our area. And so we're really appreciative of all of the puppy raisers. We kind of had a minor flood yesterday. Well, no, we had a major flood. ensuing all kinds of problems, which has then made it so that we now have a second relieving area. So if you do not know that, they're outside the front entrance of the hotel and to the right. There is a second area for relieving your dogs. As at the other relieving area, there are bags for picking up. There are sanitizing wipes and gloves if you need them. And so all of those things, that area is also available for people to use. And I believe that is all of my announcements. Okay.
Thank you, Mary Beth. Before we go on, let's give the both puppy clubs a big round of applause.
Hard work.
I actually want to, I will essentially make it a motion, and if you, Ann, would like to do it under new business, that's fine, but it's concerning the puppy club and then another motion concerning Ed Ames.
Yeah, I'll mention here for those that may not be aware, a long time guide dog users member and resident of Fresno here, Ed Ames, who has been an incredibly strong advocate and champion in the assistance dog movement, passed away last weekend, and his definitely a very big loss for the assistance dog movement. So let's observe a moment of silence for Ed. All right. Very good. I'm going to also mention very quickly, in our business meeting, one piece of business we are going to be conducting towards the end, we're going to take a very brief kind of straw poll concerning the discussion that we've been having at the both the board meeting and general sessions concerning the possibility of going to CCB having one convention per year versus the present two conventions that we have. So we will be doing that as time permits. Depending on how much time we have, it may be just a kind of a show of hands, or we may have time to have maybe a brief discussion, two pro, two con, see how it goes. All right. Committee reports. Pat, do you have news on the membership front?
Hello, everybody. The last I knew, unless we've gained some new members in the last couple of days, we have 57 paid members, 57, and that's good. That's good, but we can always get more. We can always get more. And I have sent out reminders to everyone on the list to pay their dues no later than February 15th so we can have the whole roster made up and mailed in by the end of February. And I also, at the guide dog, at the Good Duck booth, there are new brochures that we made up with new pictures on it and different statements on it than was on before. It's a tri-fold folder that Perry very nicely printed up for us. So I need to thank my husband for doing that because I can't do trifold things at all. But he did all that. So there is a new brochure to hand out. And, of course, copies can be made of that if we need more. And I guess that's about all. Thank you.
Thank you, Pat. Looks good. All right. Anything? Well, unfortunately, our editor of Forward, Lee Morton, is not here with us. She couldn't make it to this convention. I know the new issue of Forward just came out. I hope those of you have all received it either via email or cassette or however, whatever format you prefer. Good. It is a really good issue, I thought. Very good. All righty. Any other, let's see. Any other committee reports? Is there any, are you on, you're on publications also, aren't you, Pat? I guess, so all there was really was about the brochure, really. Yeah. Okay. I will defer, I will wait for the nominating committee report till closer to time for elections. I just want to briefly mention that I've really, over the past 5 years, I've really enjoyed being your president. It's been a real pleasure to be involved with this great organization. I think we've gotten some pretty neat things done over the years, some pieces of legislation that we've been had worked with have passed. Probably the most notable was AB 1801 by Fran Pavley, the safe travel bill. And we've, you know, certainly been dealing with issues that, you know, quiet cars and a lot of other pedestrian issues and access issues. And I think one thing that I've really tried to do as your president is keep the programs interesting and provocative and get good speakers in. And I think the best thing that, you know, the single best thing I think that we did is a format change in which we moved the main program from the lunch to the 10 o'clock, 10 to 11:30 hour, which allowed so much more time for the speakers to do their thing and a lot of Q&A, whereas at lunchtime it was always, next thing you knew they were gone and it was not enough time to really allow for good discussion. So I just want to thank everyone for being such a, you know, great membership. I want to thank all my board, there have been different, couple of different sets of board members, but I really appreciate everything everyone has done to help me out and support my efforts. So that's just a little, real brief presidential report here, kind of a farewell, so to speak. So. All right, thank you. let's go ahead and have our nominating committee report and our elections. Let's go ahead and get that done. So let's give it over to our nominating committee chair, Jerry Arakawa.
We're trying to straighten out dates of term outs and so forth. But the I was the chair of the nominating committee this year, and I really want to thank my colleagues on the committee, that is Mary Beth Randall and Pam Metz. So we got together, and it's never an easy task to come up with appropriate names to put forth for the slate. But this year, the office of president is open, and the office of secretary is open. And for those two positions, the nominating committee has put forth the name of Mary Beth Randall for president and the name of Pam Metz as secretary. And both of these positions have termed out, so I think we will proceed at this point for the elections. That's my committee report at this point.
All right. Without further ado, we are going to begin our elections. So, our first thing on the slate is the office of president, and the nominating committee selected Mary Beth Randall as the nominee. So, with that, are there any other nominations from the floor? Are there any other nominations? Going three times, are there any other nominations? All right. Nominations. All right. We have a move and second. The nominations be closed, and Mary Beth Randall be elected by acclamation. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Congratulations, Mary Beth. Wow, excellent.
I have. Let's see if this works. Oh, hey, it works. The puppy raisers are good, you see. They fixed this thing. Thank you very much. It's been an absolute pleasure working with GDUC over these years, and it's been awesome working with Ann. I know that working with Ann as our immediate past president is going to be wonderful, and she's done good things for all of us, and so definitely appreciate her very much, and we'll look forward to working with all of you on future projects and all of that kind of thing. So, thank you.
Right, next we have the office of, and this obviously is going to mean that we will have the position of treasurer is going to be open for a 1 year serving Mary Beth's last year of her second term as treasurer. So that position will be open for 1 year as well, and we'll get to that very shortly. All right, next up, the office of secretary. The nominating committee has selected Pam Metz. Are there any other nominations from the floor? Going twice, any other nominations? And three times, are there any other nominations?
How many nominations be closed that can be elected by acclamation? So I can go home.
You too. All right. Move and second that Pam Metz be elected by acclamation. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? All right. Congratulations, Pam.
Thank you. Thank
you. And, oh, God. Thank you very much. I really appreciate it. And, you know, actually, I sat there and thought about how, if I won, how I would take notes, because I'm not a fast braille reader. So I decided to take notes on the victor, put them on the string, put them on my braille note, and then let the braille note read them. That gets the note, gets all the minutes to you guys, and without me trying to struggle reading the braille. But I greatly appreciate it.
Taken over by a boy.
Yeah.
Another gob lobster animation.
And animation. It's more animated than automated at this point. Disintegrating it as we speak. Okay. As I mentioned before, since we have just now, we have our treasurer. Our current treasurer is going to be our future president, so this necessitates then the election of a treasurer to serve 1 year. And that will be coming up for a full term, a new term next year. So, with that, since we have no nominee, are there any nominations from the floor for treasurer?
I nominate Ken Metz for treasurer.
All right, the name of Ken Metz has been chosen. Are there any other nominations?
Go ahead, Tom.
Going twice, are there any other nominations? Three times, are there any other nominations?
I move the nominations be closed and that Ken Metz be elected by acclamation.
All right, move and second that Ken Metz be elected by acclamation. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Congratulations, Ken. Handle that cash.
Second. Okay, I look forward to this because Mary Beth really has it well organized, and I look forward to taking that over. That'll make it easier, again, using adaptive equipment and modern technology, so it'll make it nice. And I've done this before, and the only thing I hope I can promise you is that before this year is over, that we have more money than we do today, and we'll certainly do our best to make that happen. Thanks so much.
I agree. All right, last on our slate, we have the a director position to serve a full term, just vacated now by Pam, who would have come up anyway because it was a term from. It is a two-year term now, but it was a one-year term last year when she was elected. So this is going to be a two-year term serving from 2010 to 2012. So we will open nominations from the floor for this director position.
Mary Beth?
I would like to nominate the name of Nancy Unger.
Second.
Okay. Nancy, do you... excellent. Okay. The name of Nancy Unger has been chosen. Are there any other nominations?
Yes, Madam President. I would like to nominate Pat LaFrance-Wolf.
All right. Pat LaFrance-Wolf. Pat, do you accept the nomination? All right. Three times, are there any other nominations?
Madam President, I would like to nominate Diane Deutsch.
All right, Diane Deutsch. Very good. So we have, is there a move to close nominations? All right. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All right, we have three names out here, so we're going to probably end up having, we might have to do a runoff. I guess at this point, we will, since we don't have paper ballots handy, we will do a show of hands. Do we have someone? I'm sorry. No, I know. But I was just saying this is how we're going to do it. But first of all, would someone first like to speak for Nancy Unger? So we'll make it a very short, like 30 seconds to a minute at max. So, all right, Ken, let me hand you this mic.
No.
Good morning. Number one, this is we always look at board positions as just being there, but it's really an important position. Nancy has been with GDUC for a number of years, has attended just about all the conventions that I can think of. She has also attended some of the national conventions and gone to several of the meetings of GDUI when she's been there. Nancy has had a guide dog for many years. She has done an excellent job in working with her dog, and I think Nancy has a great deal of knowledge in regards to guide dogs, how they work, how they function, and is really good at displaying that when she's at work and also when she travels. And she does a lot of traveling. So she has her dog out there. There's a lot of exposure. She answers a lot of questions. And I just think that after all the time that Nancy has paid in GDUC, that she would be an excellent board member. Thank you.
Thank you, Ken. Next up, who would like to speak for Pat Wolf?
It gives me great pleasure to speak on behalf of Pat LaFrance Wolf. She has been a member of CCB for many years, and she has served on any number of positions within CCB and has been very active in the Guide Dog Users organization and has followed the activities of the GDUC board and just recently involved in the membership aspect of GDUC and in helping with the production of the newest brochures. I think that Pat will definitely be an excellent choice for the board of GDUC. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Nellie. All right, who wishes to speak on behalf of Diane Deutsch? All right, can we get you? And who is that, please? All right, Penny, can we get you a mic?
Great.
Diane hasn't been like a lot of us. She's only had her guide dog for 4 years. I think she has great new insight, a very new outlook on things. She's been a member of Guide Dogs for 4 years. She's a member of CCB. She in her personal life, she was a teacher. I think new blood is a good thing. Sometimes a new outlook on it. It's just another perspective. And I think she would give us a little bit more of a fresh insight.
Thank you, Penny. Very good. All right, we are going to, at this time, since we have three nominees, we'll have a show of hands for each and probably will be end up being the two highest vote counts. We'll probably very likely be in a runoff, so and we need to have a counter. Who would like to? I think we do.
If we can do the count, yeah.
And please, whoever our counter is, don't announce any results until after all three have been counted.
Okay.
And then when we have the runoff, the same thing. So, all right, without further ado, all of those wishing to elect Nancy Unger, please raise your hand. Your hands up, please, till to put them down. Okay, we got Nancy. All right, very good. All those in favor of Pat LaFrance Wolf, please raise your hand. Right, all those in favor of Diane Deutsch, please raise your hand. All right, what's our
tally?
What's our final tally here?
Okay. Read off the names and the count?
Just the names and the count, yes.
Nancy, 10. Pat, 7. Diane, 5.
Wow. Very good. Very good. All right. We are down to our final heat then. Now it's between Nancy Unger and Pat LaFrance Wolf. So, once again, and have your tallying brains go in again, please. Let's all those in favor of Nancy Unger, once again, please raise your hand. Now, all those in favor of Pat LaFrance Wolf, please raise your hand. All right, what's our count?
All right, good.
Congratulations, Nancy.
Thank you so much. I'm very shocked. I'm very honored, and I know Pat had made it. You know, Pat was close, and she's an excellent guide dog user also. And I want to say thank you for everything, and I will do my best to keep up with everything, and be more of an advocate for Gaduck and everyone else. And any questions anyone has, feel free to ask me or anyone on the board. Thank you very much.
Well, the good thing about this is now I was thinking if Pat had won, we'd have to elect membership chair. Now we don't, so we still have Pat, and now we have Nancy. So it's a good win-win situation. And remember, next year there will be another board position up. So all of you think of running again. Very good. Okay, I think at this time I'm going to entertain a brief discussion, very brief, on the possibility of going to one convention per year for CCB versus our present two per year. So let's see, would anyone, can I get two people to speak very briefly, a minute or less, for the two conventions per year? Can I have two speakers? Who would like to? Okay, Dan and Ken. All right, Dan and Ken, take it away, Dan. Let me go first.
Okay. Just being elected on the CCB Board of Directors, I know that my responsibility is to somehow being able to fund this organization. And the reason why this proposal is up to cut our conventions down to once a year is because of the economic situation our organization faces. However, I cannot support cutting our work in half. The work of the blind will be cut in half. And this is not the time to cut the work of the blind in half because of the situation with the economy and the situation with employment, education, all of those things that were talked about last night in both Mitch's and Jeff's report. I think that we have to work harder to fund this organization and not give up on the funding. So for those reasons, I would support two meetings a year because we can't operate. GDUC is going to be really hard-pressed to operate as an affiliate if we cut down to once a year. And you think membership is down now, wait till you go down to once a year. Thank you.
All right, Ken, do you have a mic?
Mark,
it was Mark. I said it was Ken.
Mark.
I'm sorry.
excuse me. My reason for, I don't know how to explain this, simple, but I know that...
Yeah, can you... Really, there you go.
I didn't know where to speak. Sorry. Is that better?
Yeah.
Okay, sorry. Anyway, I'm kind of in against having 2 a year only because of
economics.
This is
for
okay.
Two conventions
well, they didn't
a
tell
year.
I didn't hear because
no,
I
no,
had
no, we're having two for each side. So we started with two. We had Dan, and I wanted one more speaker for two conventions per year. Then we'll go. So is there? Is there one more speaker for two conventions per year? All right. No more. Okay. Who is that, please? And who wishes to speak?
My name's Lorraine.
Oh, Lorraine. Okay, very good. Take it away, Lorraine.
Okay. I would like to speak on having two conventions a year because you're getting two different groups of people. And as was said, if you go down to one, you're going to eliminate half of the people. And I think I agree with the fact that membership would go down because they would not be able to attend. A convention that is closer to home, you're going to get the people like we do now, one in Southern California and one up in the North. There are not that many people who can attend both. So they may have valid things to bring to the table, and because they're not at the convention, they won't be able to. So I think we should keep two conventions and just work harder at getting funding in order to keep going the way we are now so that things can get better and not worse.
Thank you, Lorraine. Very good. Now on the one convention per year side, I will turn it over to the... I have one on either side, so let me turn it over to Ken.
Okay.
Thanks. Yeah, and Mark will be right after. And we're on this, Mark,
you want me to go
on
first?
Go ahead, Mark.
Thank you very much. I was listening to the other side a little bit, and I can understand your reason for having two a year, but there's people like me who have very limited income, can only make one a year. So that's my real reason for only being able to do one a year. So sometimes the ones down south having to pay for an airplane and stay for a hotel is just too overwhelming. Thank you.
Okay. I have a few things in regards to having one convention a year. I think, actually, if we really looked at it, there are people who attend those only in the north and people who attend those only in the south. But the numbers are not all that great. The majority of us are attending both conventions currently. With the economics the way it is, the way they are, I think it's very difficult. I think we heard at those who attended the board meeting the other night that we can't even send anyone to Washington, D.C., because it would have cost like about $10,000 to send six people for the ACB Legislative Conference. It also costs somewhere in the neighborhood of $30,000 for each convention that that CCB pays out. I think with modern technology, again, whether it be a phone conference where we can get many people on a line with phones and also computers, and I know not everyone has a computer, and that's why I mentioned both, we could still have at least two of our GDUC meetings per year. I think there... Thanks. And I feel that it would just be necessary to try and save some money for CCB and for ourselves. The times are very difficult right now. We are the only state that I know of in the United States that has two conventions a year. And also for those of us who like to attend the national convention and then have two conventions here, it's just almost impossible, especially when you're not working or when you retire, your income does go down, and so it makes it difficult. But I do think we could still keep up with GDUC. We could probably even do more things with GDUC by having people in different areas and getting more people involved than normally would be at the conventions anyhow. So I'm in favor of one convention a year.
All right, very good. Last call, is there anyone, we can entertain one more for each side because I think we have enough time. Is there anyone that would like to once again return to the two convention per year? And who is that again? Oh, Glenda, okay. Get you a microphone.
What I would like to say is something that was said in resolutions last night, that if you take it down to one, they're going to have to totally revamp how they do the resolution committee and so on and such. And it's,
it will be a fiasco. And so it's best that it would be two conventions a year. But anyway, that is a quote from Dave Griffin, as well as everybody else in the resolution committee.
Okay. this is Jerry Arakawa, and I'll be very brief. I thought Ken really made some excellent points. I want to speak about my feeling is that we should have one convention a year, and I say this very reluctantly. As president of a state affiliate myself, I know how much more difficult it is for state affiliates to handle membership business with one convention. But as one of the things that we've talked about on the board, and those of you who attended the board meeting Thursday know that this organization is in serious trouble, very serious trouble. The supporting two conventions a year, each convention generally costs CCB $30,000. Luckily, we generally get $15,000 back in revenue. So to subsidize meals, and this is from Jeff Tom, I spoke with him yesterday, we in the organization generally, when we subsidize meals, we subsidize hotel rooms, the cost of rooms, room rates for the membership. We do it, number one, because it eases the burden for many of us who are on fixed incomes. But in doing that, it costs this organization $15,000 per convention. When we're running a significant deficit as we are, and we have no idea when or if the economy is going to have an upturn in the near future, I would submit that all of the issues around constitutional revamping and issues around resolutions and issues around logistics of the convention really won't matter if this organization becomes close to insolvent. So I say this, as I say, very reluctantly. I wish we could continue with our two convention scheme, our tradition, but it's going to make it very, very difficult. This issue has come up over and over from time to time, as many of you veterans know, veterans in the organization. But this time, the issue has really taken some traction because it's very, very serious. So on that note, I think, reluctantly, we need to look at one convention a year. Thank you.
My comment actually is in favor of the one convention. I, for many years, have said no to only having one convention. But I think we're facing the time that we need to have a quality convention and be able to have the money for it. And having a quality organization that can really accomplish things. If we're spending our money on conventions, we're not able to spend our money on the other essential things like going to Washington, D.C. and lobbying. And those things are important. I also think that if we end up with one convention per year, they will alternate north and south. They're not going to just keep them in one end of the state. I know that. I think it will encourage more members to get involved, because the membership is what's important, and the membership can carry on the business of the CCB and Gaduck. And I think it will actually encourage people.
This is Christy Crespin. I've been thinking long and hard, and I just keep waffling back and forth, but my thought is that if we had a convention in the fall of every year, that we could do some kind of seminar in Sacramento, because we cannot give up the legislative day. We need to be, our presence needs to be felt in Sacramento. So maybe we can do some kind of a mini meeting that wouldn't necessarily be a convention. But we also do have technology regarding conference calling, regarding using the internet. My thoughts are maybe we can have all on the same day in different regions meet together somewhere so that we connect, you know, maybe teleconferencing or somehow. But there, we have technology now that we didn't have, you know, when we started these two convention process. Thank you.
Well, I'm just trying to balance it out here because this will make it balanced. Everything I say makes it balanced. Oh, just kidding. No, seriously. I wanted to respond to a point that someone made about, well, if you cut it down to one, then we'd be able to afford to send people to Washington. I don't think so. I don't think that that's going to make it affordable for people to go to Washington. I'm just dedicated to the mission of the council, and somebody mentioned legislation, and that's the beauty of having a convention, because you get everybody from both sides of the state to do Legislative Day, and our legislative days have been building, not getting smaller. They've been getting bigger, and they're only going to get bigger. So, you know, I just want to caution people that this organization relies a lot on the convention process to get its work done. You've got a staff that's overworked already, and I just caution everybody that, you know, from being in the council since 90 and then being an employee for 10 years, being at these conventions, I just can't see how you're going to get the work done. Thanks.
Thank you. I think one thing that would really be neat about one convention a year, everyone has complained that, well, if we go to one convention a year, all the voting is going to be done in just in the South. Well, you know what? It is already, except for this particular convention, because we had it in Fresno. But if we did make some changes in our Constitution and bylaws in regards to how things would be handled in regards to terms of officers and things like that, if we had three-year terms, then that means every other term for president would be north, once would be south. And then, as Christy said, what we would also end up doing, then we could have a legislative day in the south, and we could also have a legislative day in the north, and use that also with day at the Capitol. And I just think that way, the reason we've had success in numbers with the day at the Capitol is because we've had all of our conventions up in Sacramento. Once we start moving them, such as the one in the spring at San Francisco or Burlingame at the Crown Plaza, we're not going to go to Sacramento. So that one really doesn't fit. So I think if we had a special Sacramento day once a year, then we would have even bigger crowds.
This is neither for nor against. However, what I want to do is I want to encourage everybody in this room, no matter how you feel about this, you need to vote on this. So don't, you know, just shine it on. This is really important. So no matter how you feel about it, go and vote. Don't walk away from this. This is really important. This is the future of CCB. So I implore all of you, when the vote comes, when this discussion comes, stand up and do something.
Thank you, David. All right. I want to remind everyone, we're going to just take a simple voice vote here. How this turns out will affect my vote on behalf of GDUC as your delegate. I will be voting for one or the other. So this afternoon, as David mentioned, we will have our discussion, our debate, and as we voted at general session last night, we voted to also have the final vote on this issue this afternoon, as opposed to tomorrow morning's business meeting as was previously planned. So with that, I will ask all who wish to remain with two conventions per year, please signify by saying aye. Those who wish to go to one convention per year, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Oh, sounds like one convention prevailed. All right, I will be voting on behalf of GDUC, and of course everyone gets to vote individually as well. So looks pretty, a fairly good majority went for one convention. So I don't think we need. It was pretty loud, pretty loud. All right, thank you everyone. Now, do we have any new business, Mary Beth?
Thank you. I have two items. I apologize. The first item is that because we have had our puppy raisers helping us out so much and all of that sort of thing, I would like to see GDUC give something to the puppy clubs in terms of a monetary donation so that they can continue to have funds to do the work that they're doing in their clubs, because it isn't all free for them, and so the work that they do is very important, and so I'd like to see our GDUC give a donation to the clubs for helping us out this weekend. I would like to make an offering of $50, and
thanks. I was actually wondering if Mary Beth would accept a friendly amendment. I think, and I know we're down a little, but I still think $100 for each would certainly give them a lot of opportunity to continue the fine work they do for all of us. And they have been here since Thursday, and you know, just do everything that we've asked at the booth. That we certainly outside, and we won't even discuss the stuff out there. but they do a tremendous job, and I'd like to see if she'd accept a friendly amendment for $100 each.
I will definitely accept that as a friendly amendment. And they have gone above and beyond that as well. So, yes, I will definitely accept that as a friendly amendment.
No, not a friendly amendment.
But, yes, I will definitely accept that, yes.
All right, we have a motion with a friendly amendment to give the two puppy raiser clubs $100 each in remuneration for their fine work that they're doing for us. So, with that, all those in favor of the motion signify. Oh, is there any other discussion, real quick? All right, hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Excellent. Any other new business?
All right. I'm a bad person to bring this up, but I'm going to do this one more time, and then I promise I'll be good. in the light of Ed Ames passing away this last weekend, one of the things that Tony, his wife, has asked is that in lieu of any flowers or anything like that, that would be normally sent to her, that any donations would be sent to the organization that Ed was a part of putting together, IAADP, International Association of Assistance Dog Partners. All right, there we go. And I would like to have Guide Dog Users of California make a donation to them you know, for Ed. I would like to entertain the idea as a motion of $100 to be sent to IAADP.
Mm-hmm. All right, we have a motion to offer a donation to IAADP on behalf of GDUC for $100. Is there any more? You said 100, yeah. A C note. Okay. Is there any further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Excellent. Very good. Very worth a cut. And Ken? Fairly.
Also, I think at the same time, we could also ask our members to really go on the website for those who are not members of IAADP and really see what it's all about. Because if you look at it, I think the membership is $15 a year or $20. I think it's $15. I can't remember. Is it $30? But even then, for the $30, you get different veterinarians that have agreed to give lower costs to service animals as to guide dogs, and also to obtain things such as the heart guard and flea. I forgot which one they're using. Advantage, I think it is. But I think it's worth looking at just to see the types of benefits you would get from that $30 a year. And, you know, if any of you, I mean, you're going to spend more than $30 a year just to get the one set of advantage. So, and the heart guard, that's even more money. So when you look at that, really take a look at the benefits.
All right.
Last call. Are there any further new business or announcements? Mary Beth, again?
Now, this will not ensue. Well, that was all in terms of spending money. This will not encourage us to spend money, as far as I know. and the membership, I don't think, needs to vote about this. But something that I would like for the... Oh, did we vote on... We voted on that. Okay. I would like for GDUC, and this is something that us as a board will probably want to talk about and then maybe even bring to our spring convention, would be to see if it would be at all possible for us to find a way to work together with IAADP and have a partnership with them so that we can get the word out both about them as well as about ourselves to improve our own membership as well as to help them improve their membership. And sorry. And so that is just something that I would like for our membership to really think about. And I know it was also recommended that we might possibly have them come to our spring convention as a speaker for our morning program in the spring. So I would like for everybody to really think about that, because it would be a great way for us to have an excellent partnership with everyone.
Thank you, Mary Beth. That's a great idea. Okay, and this is going to be the last one. Dan?
I like Mary Beth's idea. I think that's a great idea. You know, it could be, we might even be able to, when you join GDUC, you might automatically join IAADP. We'll try to work that out. And Mary Beth, if you need any help with that project, let me know.
Okay, any old business? Old business. No, I'm excluded. I'm not old business anymore. Okay, who, someone has a question? And a housekeeping, and then we'll adjourn. Okay.
Okay, well done. Yes, I have a question. I don't know if I would have to get it answered here or at the luncheon, but are there certain specific regulations on how fast or how slow a person should walk with a guide dog to be able to get a guide dog? And this is directed at all of the schools. I really need to know this. Because someone was turned down for a guide dog because they walk too slow. And I need to know, is there a certain policy, ruling, regulation on what the speed is, whether it be fast or slow? And if so, what is that policy? And it's directed at all the guide dog schools.
Hi, it's Michael Moore. As a guide dog user and also as a representative of Guiding Eyes, I would ask your friend to apply to a different guide dog school. there, as far as I know, guide dogs are given out that go fast, slow, and snail. So, I mean, it doesn't really matter how slow somebody walks. There's got to be a dog out there for them.
Hi, this is Chuck Jordan from Guide Dogs of America. Probably the oldest guide dog trainer in the world. that used to walk really fast guide dogs, but these days I need a slow dog. To kind of answer your question, there is not one set policy. I think each school has their own requirements, their own policies is what they're looking for. Here again, the person may have been, you know, turned down because of a speed thing. It may have been other issues. Like Mike said, there are numerous schools throughout the United States. Some schools have what they call special needs programs. Some schools don't. I would encourage the person to apply to other schools. Here again, when a person is unsuccessful one time, it doesn't mean they're going to be unsuccessful the next time. I've seen people be successful with several dogs in a row and then have crash and burn on the dog and get another dog. So it's just something you keep have to persevering for. It's like having good orientation and mobility skills. That's important, but sometimes people without a dog that are dog dependent are horrible with a cane but are very good with a dog. So I don't think there's an absolute black and white answer to your question. I recommend the person just continue to persevere forward, make sure they're in shape. It's not speed as much as this, to me as an instructor. It's the ability to daily work the dog. As Mike said, we have numerous situations where even a person, as they, shall we say, as we all mature in our age, you know, we may have been young, fast, aggressive workers at one point, but as we get older, we have to slow down, and sometimes we have to find a special dog for people. So I would tell your friend not to give up. Well, each school handles that differently, yes. But, you know, at our school we have an appeal process, but here again, a lot depends on the person understanding why they were not accepted at that point in time. At our school, if we do turn someone down, we usually give them recommendations of how to try to get in better shape or whatever the circumstances might be. And I'm sure all the other organizations do similar as well.
Hello, my name is Penny. I'm from Bakersfield. When I went after a guide dog, I researched all the schools. You need to research the schools because all of them have different requirements. They may scare you, but you know what? When the trainers come out and talk to you, they're very good. All the schools have something good. Each of them have their special fortes. Each school has a little different program, maybe. And they do. I know a school that gave a dog to a woman that could only walk 2 blocks just to visit her friend. She was 70 years old. And, you know, that's there. They're there for us. They help us. And you just need to look for the right school.
All right. Is there a motion to adjourn? All right. Move in a second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
And this is my last meeting. Thank you all very much. Yahoo! Okay. We want to order, please. We want to get started with our panel. I want to introduce our moderator. This is someone we all have known for a long time, and he is certainly going to do an excellent job. I'm going to be vacating here and moving to the audience since I'm not the moderator. So with that, please welcome our CCB Director of Advocacy and Governmental Affairs, Mr. Frank Welty. Take it away, Frank.
Hey. Hello, Frank. Hello.
So are they?
Good morning, everybody. We're going to get back going again now. Hello, everyone. This is Frank Welty, CCB Director of Advocacy and Governmental Affairs. It's great to be here. And by the way, I'm going to announce publicly that I'm about to become a member of GDUC. And in fact, that'll be coming. In fact, this coming Friday, I've got a guide dog school home visit coming up. Ooh. After spending a year and a half with a dog, I'm no longer scared that I can't handle it. So, I'm. Yeah, that, hey, I got over the biggest hurdle right there. I mean, well, I'm glad to hear we have a good group here. California is a unique state in many ways. California is a unique state in many ways. One in particular is that we are blessed with a strong guide dog industry. We have three well-established guide dog schools here in the state of California. And we're also unique in that we have a state board that regulates the guide dog industry, the State Board of Guide Dogs for the Blind. And it has a long history in the state, and sometimes controversial. And especially of late, I think there we've found that there is divergence of opinion as to the status and the future role of the Guide Dog Board. And so the leaders of GDUC have organized what I'm going to call a dialogue. I say a dialogue rather than a debate, because in debates people just talk at each other trying to score points. And I hope that in our dialogue, although different opinions will be expressed, that we will be speaking to each other and learning and getting at truth, more important, which would be far more important than trying to win points. And so I'm looking forward to us having a great dialogue so that we all learn different perspectives about the Guide Dog Board. Representing the Board of the Guide Dogs for the Blind is the Board Secretary of the Guide Dog Board. That is Tony Candela, who, of course, also works with the Department of Rehabilitation here in California. And to my right, we have Teresa Duncan from Guide Dogs for the Blind, who is and a guide dog user, who is going to take a different view of the Guide Dog Board. So the way our format is going to work today is that we're going to start with opening statements up to 10 minutes apiece, and then I'm going to walk the mic around, and we're going to continue the dialogue with you, the members of the group, and we will go alternate back and forth, pro and con, and each of you will be given an opportunity of 2 minutes remarks, after which our panelists will have a minute to respond. Each of them will have a minute to respond, and we'll go back and forth and share ideas, and hopefully we will learn a whole lot in the next hour. So, with that, I'm going to turn the microphone over to Tony Candela. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Frank. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm glad that this is not a debate but a discussion, because it would not be the way of the board to purposely engage in debate, but always to engage in discussion. The Guide Dog Board has, as Frank mentioned, a very long history going back into the 1940s, and it is in existence primarily as a consumer protection vehicle, and was created back in the late 1940s specifically for that purpose. At that time, the environment was different than it is today. So we recognize that even at its statutory roots, there's always a room to look at and review what the original purpose of the board was, specifically to see whether or not changes can be made, even at the legislative or statutory level. So with that, just as background, that the board is and its existence in the way that it was originally set up to exist does not have to be a static thing. It can be a dynamic thing that changes, which is why I'm very happy to be here to have a conversation with everybody. I frankly can't wait to hear what Teresa is going to say. but let me just tell you a few things about the board, what it originally was set up to do, how it's functioned through the years, how we're trying to function today, so you know what is the beast that we're talking about here from my point of view. The first thing that was hoped for when the board was set up was that there needed to be a mechanism, and it looked at the time, seems to have proven true through the years, that there needed to be a way to make sure that the large sums of monies that are donated to guide dog schools for the purpose of providing guide dogs to blind users, that money was managed properly, so that shysters out there would be dissuaded from cheating the public, so that the guide dog schools, who are the bona fide guide dog schools who get the money, first of all, that they would get the money, and that somebody that shouldn't get the money didn't get the money, and that when the guide dog schools got the money, that they use it for the purposes that that the, you know, the guide dog industry sets itself up for. You know, the board just in general does not, for example, in any way, shape, or form try to police the three guide dog schools here in California. There are some mandatory inspections that take place to make sure the fundamentals are being taken care of. Some of those fundamentals have to do with paperwork and documentation that needs to be maintained by the schools, and some has to do with just the general operations of the schools. Again, this is the board's consumer protection leg, and we are unique in this country in that we have this board. So first up came the money. Second came the quality of service. How could we, especially back in the days when the law was originally passed, how could we ensure that the quality of guide dog training services, the way people are treated, how things are done, you know, stays at a good quality level, and that there's and when you talk about consumer protection, you look to things like that there's no mistreatment of people. That there is fairness. There was a little discussion before about, well, what happens if a person is told, no, you're not at this time a viable student for us here at this school. What happens? Well, when you're in a state or in a situation, a country where you have lots and lots of choices, that particular way of dealing with that particular student becomes a little less serious. But if you're in a limited situation where you've got, as the economists would say, scarcity, and you're stuck with either that particular service provider or not, that decision by that school becomes more serious. Now, we take this into the context of how things go on today. As long as there are choices, as long as there's variety, as long as there's a free-flowing market, as it were, and as long as the market seems to have ways of self-correcting if something goes wrong, the need for a strict consumer protection role of a board like ours becomes a little less. As long as those natural forces are playing out, in situations where it's hard to tell if those forces are playing out, then people are grateful to have someone kind of overseeing the process, not from the point of view of ordering everybody around, but from the point of view of making sure that the consumers are protected. So the consumer protection element really is at the heart and soul of why a board exists. We're lucky here to have three schools in the state. We're also lucky to have schools around the country. There's a free flow of people back and forth, which gets us to a couple of the items that have sparked the debate and why perhaps we're sitting here today. Just want to mention them. First one is the way the board is set up. It is designed to be self-funded. Its costs are the cost of the salary and benefits for its executive director, some fees to the mother agency, which is the Department of Consumer Affairs, for clerical assistance, legal assistance, accounting assistance, things of that nature. Travel, the cost of the board itself functioning, things of that nature. Not a lot of money, but the money predominantly comes from two sources. Fees paid to the board by the guide dog schools, which has sparked a little bit of debate lately. And the other is licensing fees, because we do license the guide dog trainers. On the first one, the controversy that came up recently was because we lost a chunk, 3 minutes, we lost a chunk of our income due to a change in the status of one of the schools and how the fees are assessed to that school. So the recent legislation that did get passed is to adjust the fees, gives us the ability to adjust the fees just so we can stay financially solvent. That's all that was about. That's all it ever was about, and that's all it ever will be, just to help us to stay financially solvent. The fees to the trainers is relatively speaking, I don't hear a lot of complaining about it. They take an exam, a rigorous exam. National standards actually have kind of evolved out of that exam process, and other schools use some of the standards that we've developed here in California. So the centralized role of a board that looks out for what's going on in general, very important. I want to close by saying the board is flexible. It does not exist to defend its existence. It exists to provide service. Its mission, its primary role, is consumer protection. There are different things that we do. We much as you just discussed before, like to think about working with our partners out there to help to maintain the integrity of assistance animals, especially assistance dogs in general. So we can make for you another advocacy arm or leg, and we take that role very seriously. So as we talk about the existence of the board, we talk about its advocacy role as well. We can be here to work with you and for you. We are pro-consumer. We are here to listen. We are flexible. We're pro-choice. We want you to have choices, and including when out of this is a different political agenda. I just switched topics, and I've got 1 minute left, and I'm wrapping up now. We really do like the fact that the natural order of things does involve choice. We're not here to squelch choice, because as much choice as there is, then although there may be some complexities, you know, if you have somebody who is not a well-qualified teacher teaching, or if you have a school that perhaps its overall functioning level is not as well as contemporary standards would dictate, we're glad to have a board. We've been approached by other states on occasions to help with some problems in their states. So the existence of a board to look at the whole industry and to be a safeguard, that consumer protection element, is the heart and soul. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Tony. Thank you very much, Tony. I'm going to reset my stopwatch, and I'm going to pass the microphone over to Teresa.
Well, good morning, everyone. It's great to see all of you out here in Fresno, and it's fun to be on a panel with Tony. That's cool. I thought it might be more fun if we did an arm wrestling kind of way of figuring this out, but since we've decided to go with discussion rather than debate, I guess we'll just stick with that, be a little more classy, I suppose. Tony, you know, definitely gave a really good explanation of what the state board has been for years, and we have all benefited, especially when in the early days of guide dog schools starting and before there were other regulations that could sort of help consumers and help donors to make sure that our dogs were good and well-trained and that donor dollars were being spent wisely and going to legitimate organizations. I guess my view on it is that things have changed, and it almost feels like a redundancy to have the board right now in the capacity that it's being used right now. If there are problems with any organization that you belong to, let's say you belong to you're a consumer of services at the Lighthouse for the Blind, or you're a consumer at the Braille Institute or something like that. Just like if you're a consumer at Guide Dogs, if you have a problem, you can, you know, go to the State Attorney General's office. Systems in place now to take care of consumer issues that have been set in stone for a long time now. And I think that people can rely upon those. There's also, when we started the state board, it was really important because there weren't those in place. And so now that we have also consumer organizations like the American Council of the Blind to also help to make sure that consumers are being treated fairly and being treated well. And I just think historically, over time, there's only been one arbitration that's come through the board in however many years. So it's been just one in 1997. And so I think that that's, you know, kind of shows that there are other ways to make sure that people are protected. Also, the board was here to help with making sure that schools, you know, were setting up and providing services that were legitimate. And in the past, we have had times when that hasn't happened. And recently, in the early 90s, there was a school that started in California, and the state was instrumental in getting it kicked out of California. Of course, being that we're the only state that has a board, it went to New York. And even without a board, through the Attorney General's office, that school was kicked out. So I think there are other ways to get the consumer protection that we all desire. And, you know, and frankly, there is a cost. Before the 90s, before the board was due to sunset in the early 90s, prior to that, it was funded through, you know, taxpayer dollars. Since then, it's been funded through the schools. And it is a large amount of money that our donors give us to help put together guide dog teams. And it's getting spent for a board that, you know, in many ways we feel is a redundant service. And another reason, you know, I think the board has been great, like you said, in setting up standards for licensing, instructors, and that type of thing. Well, now, starting from the early 80s, we have the International Federation of Guide Dog Schools, and they actually do a extremely thorough accreditation program that's worldwide and goes to each school, and schools can be accredited through the IGDF, which you know, takes into consideration training, dog training, people training, record keeping, all of that stuff as well. And the people who actually come out and do the accreditation of the schools are people who are in the field of guide dog training and are also trained to be assessors. So there's a little bit more training behind the certification process through the IGDF. So that's just kind of what I'm... my feelings about the board, and I guess I can just hand this over to Frank, and I would love to hear what ideas you all have out there.
Thank you to both of you. Now, this is the time when we're going to open up the discussion and bring everybody, as well as much as we have time for, into it. So I'm getting up and I'm going to start walking the mic around. And again, the way I'm going to do this is I'm going to ask for somebody who wishes to speak in support of the board first. And you'll have 2 minutes, and then our two panelists will have a chance to respond. So if somebody who wants to speak for the board wishes to say your name, please say your name. Charlene, and you're going to speak for the board.
I'm speaking in favor of the board. I hear the saying, a buyer beware, and I compare the guide dog sort of to a person buying a car who's never driven in there before, and someone has a car, they sell them, but it needs a front-end alignment. They learn to drive the car anyway and don't realize that something's wrong with it until they loan it to somebody who says, gee, the front end of your car needs to be aligned. They get it fixed, and they find out what a wonderful job their car does of being driven. People who get their first guide dog do not realize what all a guide dog needs to do. I have had dogs from other states before this guide dog international thing and the state or national guide dog board. One of my dogs had no idea of how to handle curbless areas, and fortunately I'd had dogs from another school, which was a California school, because I had all of the different variety of trainings. Though I didn't use it, I still had it, so I could rely on that training when it was lacking somewhere else. So the fact that we don't have complaints, we don't have problems with training and stuff, is because we have somebody watching. And other agencies or organizations have that. The cosmetic community, you know, business has people watching. The doctors, the medical associations do. And I think we deserve to have a watchdog for us. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And now I'm going to walk back over to our panelists, and each one will have a minute to respond. So I'm walking back over to Tony.
Thank you for that comment. I think that it's hard to argue the negative argument, which is what would happen if the board wasn't there. So when we look at the things that could go wrong, and we wonder whether the existence of the board and if, you know, as a watchdog organization is preventing them from going wrong or enables us to catch things quickly, when you don't know what isn't happening, it's hard to argue what I would call the negative argument. So I would say that I appreciate the comment. We truly believe that there are enough examples out there of what starts to happen that gets caught early, and some of the prevention that occurs to make that a worthwhile argument. Even though it is tough to argue about something that doesn't happen, we think that we do serve a preventative role. Thank you.
Okay, and Teresa?
I just want to assure you that not just through the state board, but through the International Federation, schools are accredited, and any school that's accredited through the International Federation would have dogs that, you know, would be working appropriately. And I also wanted to also just to point out that in every other state, there are really good guide dog schools that are not overseen by a board, for which actually the board that we have in California is something that the school pays for. So there's also kind of an ethical concern there.
Okay. And now I'll take somebody who wishes to speak to challenge the board. Jerry Arakawa.
You know, as many of you know, I'm a employee of the state of California, and there's the popular perception nowadays, both within and outside of state government, that the state is going to hell in a handbasket for a whole variety of reasons. One of the things about California, which is absolutely right in my opinion, is the fact that we are so blessed with having three great guide dog schools. Every one of them is top-notch, in my view. And what makes them top-notch is not just because they have great quality trainers who put the dogs and the consumer first, not just the policy of the schools. I've seen and taught, you know, I go to one particular school, and I'm just so impressed with the particular school I go to, and I talk to other consumers who have the same feeling that the schools these days are tremendously responsive to consumer issues, and they're the first to develop innovative policies, and they're also the first to make corrections. More importantly than the schools, there's no better policing agency, I think, for guide dogs than the court of public opinion. Those of us who use guide dogs know how valuable they are, and they know how important they are. Guide dogs are in their particular lives. And believe me, if a school has a problem, that reputation goes out over the public airwaves in a minute. So I think the guide dog board, unfortunately, you know, with all due respect to Tony, is another bureaucracy that we don't need, since we already have both consumer and schools as policing agencies. Thank you.
Thank you. And now we're going to go back to our panelists to respond.
Thanks, Jerry, for the comment. Two things. One, the guide dog board is not really much of a bureaucracy at all. It's actually a quite simple unit. The expenses I laid out for you are countered by all of the volunteer work of the members of the board itself. It's not a large bureaucracy. Matter of fact, quite frankly, it could be a little larger than it is. It probably could do more things, especially on the enforcement side of the house. The focus of the board, quite honestly, is not very much on the guide dog schools. I think the issue of the fees we charge to the guide dog schools and the annual inspections, I do not believe those annual inspections are considered onerous by the schools. I do think that some attention has been given because of the fees we charge the schools, but that's the schools. And, you know, for the most part, the schools are doing great. It's the other things out there also that we look out for. Advocacy, information giving, and other things like that. So it's not just the schools. Time is up. Here's the microphone.
And Teresa?
You know, I don't have a lot to say. Jerry, you said it all. I think you and I are sort of on the same page about that we as consumers are able to sort of police, do our own police work, and through other means through the state. And Tony's right that as far as, you know, the state coming in to do their inspections and stuff, that's, you know, that is really not a problem for guide dog schools as far as we're concerned. It's also a great way for us to see how well we're stacking up always. So that's not a problem. Oh, Dan.
Yep.
Okay. Dan, with all due respect, what I'm going to do is I'm going to, when we come around to the con side again, I'll let you have the mic, and you'll get 2 minutes that way. Okay, so now we'll take another person who wishes to speak in behalf of the board. Do we have somebody who would like to speak up? Off to my left is Tom Scott from the Guide Dog Board.
I just wanted to add, my name is Tom Scott. I'm vice president of the state board. I think Tony laid out great reasons for the board. I would just add that, you know, in this time of serious budget cuts, serious enforcement cuts, I really question, you know, over the next 5 years, if there wasn't a board like this, how consumers would do. You know, the Attorney General is cutting services. It's hard enough even for our board to go to the Attorney General to get enforcement capabilities. So the seriousness of the budget cuts at the state of California relative to enforcement and all of those kinds of things are, to me, only going to get worse. So I question, you know, from a budget standpoint, you know, looking out for the consumers. Secondly, you know, there is an official process. For those of you who don't know, state boards go through a sunset review process. Our process, our sunset review is 2011. And I really encourage people to follow that process. You know, it's in place. If you don't want to see the board around, you know, weigh in on that sunset review process. Secondly, to me, this is sort of like the contractors board. You know, I don't think contractors are probably thrilled that there's a licensing contractors board that oversees their profession. But I think the public likes having that watchdog board in place to make sure that consumers are not hurt by wayward contractors. I don't expect the schools to love us. I will tell you, I came on this board in 2004. We are miles ahead of where we were in 2004. And I think, you know, Antoinette Sorek has done an amazing job in building relationships and really working for the positive. So, and as Tony said, we are totally flexible and open to comments, but we're here for you. And ultimately, that one instance will occur.
Okay, Tony.
Thank you, Tom. I don't think I'm going to add anything more to what he said. Tom supplemented the things I wanted to say, so I'll just pass the mic to Teresa.
Teresa.
Yeah, and I do want to thank the State Guide Dog Board, and I'm not trying to sound, you know, putting you all down, because I agree, Antoinette is fabulous. The board members are great folks and stuff, but I just don't, I still do believe that it's a redundant service that that we don't need.
Okay, and now I'm going to pass the microphone over to CCB's newest board member, Dan Kaiser, to challenge the board.
There you go, Dan.
Well, I don't know if I'm going to challenge the board, but I've got a comment. One of the things that I disagree with the board's assertion that there is that the inspections process is not onerous. I think what I've heard from a couple of CFOs in particular is that they're just tired of having to submit the same paperwork with the same information to multi-agencies. And to me, that's not government efficiency. That's not efficiency. And, you know, when there was a consumer movement that started, a consumer rights movement, a consumer protection movement that started in the 1960s and blossomed in the 1970s and in the 80s really started getting legs and being able to get some regulatory enforcement. So 501c3s are guided and overseen by the Secretary of State and the Attorney General. Kennel inspections are overseen by the Department of Agriculture. Licensing is also done by the Department of Agriculture. It's just very, very duplicative. And in these days of budget crisis, as a consumer organization, blind people need, we all need to be responsible about the money we ask for from government and taxpayers. And if it's not necessary, we need to stand up and admit that it's not necessary anymore. Thank you.
Okay, but please remember that the Guide Dog Board is self-funded. We're not taking very much taxpayer money. Even the support we get from the Department of Consumer Affairs comes out of the money that we raise. We pay fees to them. Yes, there is a little bit of taxpayer money. It's not a large bureaucracy. As I mentioned before, quite honestly, it should probably have more money, and it should probably have more staff to really get down into some of the things that we know exist that goes on out there that that need to have some work. And quite honestly, we also would like to have more capacity to do the advocacy, the marketing, the kind of teamwork with the GDUC and the other guide dog users group here in California, work with the guide dog schools more on mutual projects with some of the other assistance dog projects out there as well, to really bolster the industry and make it stronger and protect you from some of the things that may be interfering with our ability to have good rights for guide dog users, like some of the assistance animals that are out there now. Thank you. Sorry about that.
Whew, okay. All right. Yeah. I would have loved over the years to see the board actually step up and do more in terms of advocacy and things like that that the schools have themselves taken on. And although the board is not funded directly through tax dollars, it is funded through donor dollars that people are giving to the schools. So for something that really is redundant.
We're up to the pro now. So somebody who would like to speak, make a pro comment. Do we have there's a question? Go ahead.
No, I just wasn't close enough to the mic, that's all.
Okay. Is your question more in favor or less in favor of the board? A neutral question. Okay, I think I will. Is there anybody else that wants to speak? Well, I will let the lady ask her question.
I'm reaching over.
My name is Olivia Ostergaard. I'm a recent graduate of GDA. I really question the fact that they're saying there are three guide dog schools in the state, because I have heard recently that Desert is dying and just about ready to fold. Okay. I heard I was a student there in the early part of this decade. Well, I just question the fact that, you know, if you've got an entity that is supposed to regulate and keep track of things, and we as consumers are hearing stories that are totally horrendous, to me that just doesn't make any sense.
Okay, do our panelists wish to respond? No comment. Okay. Now, I'll get over to the other side of the room, but I know that Nancy Unger had a question, so I'm going to come over to Nancy.
Well, I have a question. I'm wondering why... Well, this is just... anyway, my question is, why aren't there any blind dog guide consumers on the board, on the state board? There are two on the board? I had no idea. I apologize. Thank you.
Yes, I will answer. There are two guide dog users on the board, and one blind member who is currently not a guide dog user, and then two sighted individuals. I'm going over to the other side of the room to pick up a question. If somebody is ready to, I'll take a couple more informational questions, and then I'll go back to the back and forth. So, who has a question?
Hi, my name is Linda Samolsky, and I am with Guide Dogs of the Desert. But I'm asking this question for myself, and this is directed for Tony. Could you tell us what, like, in the life of, what you guys do in a particular day? What might happen in a particular day?
Actually, a day in the life of the Guide Dog Board focuses on the work of the executive director. The board has subcommittees that do meet, and we meet with consumer organizations and others. We have a legislative subcommittee, outreach committee, things like that. We set up some conferences one a year for sure. The daily work, though, the gut work is the executive director. That's our fully salaried position, and she's out there doing all of the contacting, making all of the arrangements, working with the support that is provided by the guide dog schools, the users groups, the Department of Consumer Affairs, pushing through the legislative process and the regulatory process when that stuff is needed, handling the budget, things of that nature, and gathering and pumping out lots of public information over the website. So the day in the life really focuses on the executive director, and the board meets four times a year in four different parts of the state.
There you go. Okay, and Teresa, do you want to make any remarks? Nope. Okay, I'm going to take one more question before we go back to our dialogue format. Is there another question? Paula?
I have a question. I have a multiple disability, and I've had a service dog before I got my guide dog, and it's interesting. I haven't heard where there's a legislation or a committee for guide dogs or service dogs, and I'm wondering why it's only for guide dogs.
That sounds like a question that's directed to Tony. So, Tony?
Actually, I don't know the answer. Dan Kaiser does. Dan, here.
Here's Mike. In the 1990, Pat Urena wrote a report, who was an executive director of the Guide Dog Board, about the feasibility of consolidating all the service animal industry into the State Guide Dog Board to regulate all service animals. And then there was something called the Americans with Disabilities Act that came out. When the ADA came out, nobody wanted to touch it, and then the ADA had given such license to... no licenses to service animals, that why would the service animal industry want to support this? They tend to be opposed to it. I tried to organize them in 99, 2000, and we met. I got some of them on a conference call, and they were willing to talk about it, the different schools, the service animal schools, into consolidating with the board, but then they backed off. I don't see that being a reality, especially with the other issue about the, you know, independent animal rights movement that's out there. That's sort of clouding the issue. So,
service dogs, that'll be next spring's debate.
Yeah, now that is an important topic that we really should all figure out. But back to this, the service dogs through I believe it's ADI are starting to form their own certification process, much like what we have through the International Federation.
Okay, and I want to get back to somebody who might have a pro board comment to make. Okay, and who do we have here? Chuck Jordan. Okay.
This is Chuck Jordan, and I'm going to use the Ken Mertz rule. His 30 seconds turned into 4 minutes, so my 2 minutes turned into an hour and a half. actually, I want to point out a couple of things, because I do think that the board over the years, certainly understanding the way it started, why it started, was right at the time. I know I've gone back and forth on should the board exist, should it not exist. I'm more pro-existing now, in the respect that, and I agree with what Tom said earlier, since 2004, I think the board has become much more viable, not only in the advocacies for the consumer, but, you know, I know we're all working, the three schools and the board and the legal counsel they bring to it, on cleaning up a lot of the language and the laws that, while well-meant and intended when they were written, are pretty bad, and we're trying to get them cleaned up where it benefits everyone. The IGDF keeps being mentioned, and the point I wanted to make there is keep in mind, in the state of California, guide dog schools and guide dog instructors have been certified and have a credential by way of license for over 61 years. The IGDF is relatively new. If you look in the 80s when it was formed, while they do an assessment process, that's once every 5 years. The state inspects, and it's basically the same process that the IGDF does, but it's done on a yearly basis. The instructors in preparing to get their license, I think, are extremely educated, much more so than what I've seen outside of the state before. Not saying that other schools don't have good instructors, but they're not educated in the same way. And very frankly, the IGDF is more of a European-based organization, and it has a lot of principles that I don't agree with. I know none of you in this room that we will not be allowed to get on an escalator, which is kind of IGDF. You know, consider that.
Okay. I'm coming back around to Tony.
Oh, no, Frank has really good auditory location skills. That's good. Thank you for those comments. I know that it's the next thing that the board does that is momentous, that really counts. So we don't want to rest on the laurels of the past, but some of the work that's been done by the board has led to organizations like IGDF looking to the standards that we set out here in California. What you need to know is that these standards were not set by the executive officer at the time and the members of the board at the time. These things were all set by the community of guide dog schools and guide dog trainers and guide dog users coming together to put this stuff into play, including the examination processes, etc. So what you need to know is that this is a community effort, and the American guide dog community really I think like that example of the escalator has to be careful to not look to another authority figure just because it's there. They really do have to look at what they've got here that it's well worth preserving. End of my 10 seconds.
Very good. And Teresa, any comments?
I just wanted to say that the licensing of instructors, the testing, all that type of thing, that's followed by other schools in other states that are well-respected and reputable schools. So I don't think that we need an actual state licensing department when we would self-regulate that, as all the other guide dogs do in other states, such as the Seeing Eye, Guiding Eyes. These are all fabulous organizations.
I will entertain another challenge to the board or questions. I hear several people. Ken Metz, do you want the floor? Okay, Ken.
Thank you. I think initially the board served a great purpose, and I think even in the early 90s, the board served a great purpose when it helped to get legislation to implement the program of arbitration. But ever since the early 90s, I haven't seen much consumer work by the board. I think that the board has, when I've gone to the meetings, a lot of the discussion is very basic. It does not include anything regarding any of the issues consumers have. I also think that the consumers, over the years since the board began, have learned finally and rightfully how to advocate for themselves, because no one else can advocate for a guide dog handler, as far as I'm concerned, but a guide dog handler and other guide dog handlers. I think that we've had some real issues there as far as consumers really being involved with the guide dog board. I have seen issues now in the strategic plan. It looks like they want to get back, from what I've heard at their meetings, they want to get back to doing some work for the consumers. But it's sort of like a little bit and a little too late, as well as the fact that who would be good to work as an executive director of the guide dog board, maybe a guide dog handler. That hasn't happened in 60 years, and we've certainly had qualified people to do that. That has never occurred. While we have some blind folks on the board, we have two users out of, what is it, 5-6 members on the board? And we have two guide dog users. That's real consumer consideration, folks. Thank you.
You know, as my fatigue level goes up, I need this microphone back fast before I forget what somebody said. thanks, Ken. I think the board realizes two things. Substance is worth way more than form. So I quite honestly think that we have to make sure we see what the board actually does. You know, at a certain point, we look for folks to be on the board that we think can do what needs to be done at that time. And as things change, the board configuration changes. We would actually entertain the notion of changing the legislation so the board configuration could have more guide dog users on it by mandate, because they get on the board by governor's appointment. So there's some politics here. And I really, really take to heart, and it's so very well taken, the issue of dealing with what is the foundation stone of this board, consumerism. That's the most important thing.
Here you go, sir. Okay, Teresa?
I just really wanted to echo what Ken said about those of us advocating for our own rights as guide dog users, as consumers of any service. I feel like as a blind person myself, I feel like it's a little bit odd that this is sort of the one thing for blind people that you know, my orientation mobility instructor doesn't have a state license. You know, they're licensed through a professional organization. And I just, you know, to me it's you know, a smidge bit offensive that it seems that we as blind people somehow need this extra protection, because I think that we have the ability to take care of ourselves.
Okay, I'm ready to take another statement from the group in behalf of the board. Do we have any more comments who wish to be heard? Hearing none, I will take one more con. A lady in the back. I'm going to call. I know that Christy there. And Christy, you've been calling for the mic, so I'm coming on back there. Give me one more shout here so I can hear you.
Right there. Okay, there you go.
You know, I've been a long-time proponent of the guide dog board, and during the last go-round, I was really kind of appalled at how could you think we shouldn't have a guide dog board? Well, I think the time has come. I commend what the guide dog board is supposed to be doing, But again, the executive director is not someone who uses a guide dog. Is someone who likes dogs. I'm sorry, that's not good enough. I really think we need to, you know, it still does take some state funds. It takes tax dollars. Maybe we'll figure out a different way to, quote, license guide dog trainers. But I think it's time we need to move on. Thank you.
You know, one of the themes that's coming out of this is both the politics of the board and how we may have offended some. And the other one is the consumerism thing, or what have we done for you lately that you need doing. We have engaged in a strategic planning process, which is completed now. A whole lot of emphasis on moving back toward assistance to the consumers. That's you guys. The politics and the money are definitely splashing into this, and why not? Because it's all politics in the end anyways. So we accept that is the nature of how we exist in this state, that we need to do better by our politics. We need to do something. Obviously, the money issue is sticking in the craw of some people, and really we want to make sure we do right by you, the users, and what you need us to do. So we take all this very seriously. Thank you.
Okay. Teresa?
You know how when you go to a party, like, sometimes you just stay a little too long? That's kind of where the board came in. Sorry. But, okay, when the board came to the party, they were the belle of the ball. We needed them, and we really have benefited over the years from having a strong advocate through the Guide Dog Board. But you know what? They've done a great job educating us, helping us to advocate for ourselves, making the schools really pony up and have some good regulations for themselves. And it's, you know, I think it's time to go home from the party, and because the rest of the party goers can take it from here.
Okay. All right. I want to get a time check here, just a moment. My pack mate says it's 11:19, so I think we've done pretty well as far as we've gone the back and forth pretty well. So I'm going to now take a few just sort of comments from people, and they don't have to be either for or against. Okay. Was that Ann? Oh, Pam. Okay. So I'm going to take a few comments from people, and then I'm going to finish up with final statements by our panelists. So I think, so if I will have the indulgence, I'm going to just take some quick comments here from folks, and then, yes, definitely. So Pam, and then I'll go to Vita.
Good afternoon. I'm more neutral. I'm a new guide dog user. I've been using guide dogs for 4 years, 4 or 5 years. And I have been to a few of the board meetings with Ken, and I have listened to both sides of this argument today. All I have to say is, if you guys want to stay around, this old saying is, what have you done for us lately? You haven't done anything. From what I've been hearing, you have to start getting out there with the consumers. And because if I can go to a meeting and with access and tell them, look, I need this for my service dog, for my guide dog, then we're fighting with access over things. We need to be able to call the board in to help us deal with these things. So my one question is, what have you done for us lately? And when you guys figure that out, then we'll talk about this again.
Okay, I'm going to take a question from Vita.
Hi. Hey, Tony, how are you? And Teresa. I just have a question, and really frank here. How much money do the guide dog schools give the board? Is it dollar amounts? Is it percentage? Could someone answer that for me?
I can tell you the percentage by law is a maximum of 0.005%, and in practice it's 0.00425%, which, Tony, you can tell me if I'm about right. The total figure is around, what, around $130,000 a year? Is that about right? What was that? And I'll repeat it in the mic. So to repeat that, okay, for the record, I'll repeat that each instructor pays, I think it's $100 a year fee to renew their license, and I think it's the initial fee is $200, if I remember correctly, $250. And then there are about 100-some-odd guide dog instructors. So, and then the schools, they pay the percentage, and I think that the total is, I think I heard Tony say that the total revenues is around $180,000 between those two sources. So that's the number. Maybe a little more, but that's about what we're talking about. Okay, I think, was that Robert in the back? Who's that? Michael. Okay, go ahead, Michael.
I have a question as a guide dog user, not as a representative of any school. My question is, because I use a dog from an out-of-state school, if I have a problem and I need to have someone come in to help me with that problem, if you are about protecting consumers, why, and I know that my trainer doesn't have a license to train in California, why hasn't the board come up with a policy of reciprocity for people who have been in the guide dog field for a long, long time who could qualify for these licenses, and they still would be paying the fee, but they would get the license with reciprocity? I know that California is not a state that likes to give reciprocity to anybody for anything. I happen to also be a lawyer. I'm not licensed in this state because I'm not taking the bar exam.
Okay, and I'm going to bring the mic back over to Tony and Teresa to respond. And Tony, make some noise for me here. Thank you. There we go.
Okay, yeah, I think the history of California consumerism is such that I think it is generally correct. California kind of guards the sanctity of what it believes standards ought to be. This is an extremely large state, 37 million people, a lot of physical territory. We are almost like a country unto ourselves here. We would love, on the issue of reciprocity, technicalities aside, we would love to have some engagement with the guide dog schools around the country and the licensed trainers around the country to figure out a way to both uphold the standards that we believe licensing in California confers and to have the trainers be licensed, but have some facsimile of that or some version of that is satisfying to everybody. What we see the politics of the country are is that the other schools around the country are laying a bit low and they are not engaging us in that conversation. So it's been very difficult. Time's up.
And it's now about 11:25, so I'm going to take Teresa's response and then I'm going to give each of our panelists 5 minutes for a final statement. I know we could go for another half an hour, but I don't think you want to wait until 1 o'clock to have lunch. So, Teresa, do you want to say anything or do you want to just go? Okay, then we'll go ahead and go into our final statements. And so I will give each of you about 5 minutes to wrap up, and then I will just say a couple of words, and then we will be finished with this segment. So, Tony, here you go.
Okay, I'm going to just try to take a couple of minutes just to... just to say that I appreciate the dialogue that we've had today. the formal process for assessing whether the board should continue on, I guess, has begun. The discussion has begun. The sunset date will be in a couple of years, and that's when legislators or the governor will together review whether this board should continue on or not. And so I am thankful for today's conversation. I'm going to bring all my notes back to the board, to the executive officer and to the board, because I do believe, as has been said here, and I said it myself, what matters the most is what have we done for you lately? And that's what matters the most. And also, what of the past is worth preserving? And how can we assure that those things that are worth preserving from the work of the board and the work of all of the partners around this table here and around in this room and out there, that work that is worth keeping and preserving stays with us, that we don't lose it. And so the key thing is to save what is good from the past and build for what we need for the future. We are not in the business of defending our existence, and I hope that that it didn't seem like that's what we were doing today. I mean, this was a debate format, but we're in the business of our mission, which is to work for you, the consumer out there. And so I take everything that's been said here very seriously, and we will work on this. Thank you.
All right. Well, again, I want to echo what Tony said and thank you all for starting this conversation. I think it's really important. As a guide dog user, I know I haven't thought all that much about the board until just recently as more, you know, the topic has come up. And so I think we should take real consideration into what we've heard today and move on. And I think, and I also want to thank the board for its work that it's done in the past. And I also want to congratulate groups such as GDUC that have sort of taken the consumer movements on themselves and are moving forward. And I kind of see that that's where the guide dog movement should go, and that's to the consumers. And I hope you all have a great convention. And just a little note for next time when we do something like this, let's have mimosas.
Now, that would definitely take us from the debate to discussion, wouldn't it? Well, thank you all for participating. For those of you that didn't get to make your comments, I apologize. Believe me, if we had another hour, we'd get everybody in the room. Of course, I think that I'm sure that both our panelists are welcome to hear from each of you offline. So, and this is obviously not the end of the discussion, but I feel really good about this discussion we've had today, that we've had an open dialogue in a positive atmosphere. I thank everybody for your participation, for contributing your ideas and your thoughts. I am going to return the microphone to your president, and thank you for having me here today to moderate this discussion. It's been a lot of fun.
Okay, who needs the microphone?
Well, I think this was an excellent forum for a dialogue that I think was a long time coming, and I think, quiet please. I hope everyone got a lot out of it. I personally really did. Great dialogue. So I want to really thank Frank for being such an excellent moderator. I want to thank all the panelists, especially, well, both sides. You know, certainly the guide dog board folks kind of had to take a little heat, but it was done in a very civil, friendly, very cooperative way, and I think we all enjoyed what was said, and I think all learned a lot about, you know, where we have to start thinking. And so I want to thank everyone for coming, and we will see you for lunch.
Quiet, please!
Well, that was good. All right. Whoa. All right, everyone. Thank you for coming to our
fall GDU's, I will be official, Guide Dog Users of California Luncheon program. It's going to be fun. So they're going to start serving pretty soon, and I think what I'd like to have introductions. I'm not sure we have mic runners or a mic runner, but if we do,
I think we do.
So we will pass the mic around. Everyone, say your name, your dog's name, and where you got the dog, and you know, keep it brief. But let's go. So we'll start here at the head table, and we'll start to my left with Mr. Kaiser.
Here you go.
I'm here with my guide dog, Hilly, who's 10 years old, and this will be her last GDUC meeting because she's retiring and she's going to become a senior therapy dog.
Hello, I'm Pam Metz, and my guide dog is Maiden, and she is from GDB.
This is Ken Metz, and I'm borrowing a dog right now. His name is Quan Cheng Kane.
There you go.
Hello, everybody. This is Mary Beth Randall from Guide Dog Users of California Board. I am treasurer for the moment. And I am here with my four-year-old yellow Labrador Tennyson from GDP. And he is my third dog.
I'm Sarah Neer, and I don't have a guide dog. I'm one of the volunteers here. I'm with the Telephone Pioneers. And I picked the best lunch to come to.
Hello, I'm Jerry Arakawa, GDUC Vice President, and I'm here with my yellow lab, Tova, from Guide Dogs for the Blind in Oregon.
Hi, I'm Olivia Ostergaard. I'm from right here in Fresno. I have my second dog, Fenway, who I've only had for 10 weeks from GDA this past summer.
My name is Lynn Coates. I'm from Northridge, California, and I have a white Canador right now.
Canador? Good heaven.
Hi, my name is Vita Zavoli, and I'm here with my dog Fancy, who's a shepherd from Fidelco in Connecticut. And we're about to become a two-child household because my husband, Frank Welty, most of you know, has his first guide dog interview next week with GDB.
Hi, Susan Henry with my...
Speak into the mic, please.
I have a big mouth. You can hear me without the microphone. My name is Susan Henry with my black lab, Peyton, from GDA. Peyton should be retiring in the next few months, but since she's my fourth dog, it is a lifestyle, so I will be getting another one.
My name is Ramona Craig, and I have a soon-to-be 11-year-old dog from GDA. This will be her last convention, too. But she's from GDA named Brooke, and she's prettier than Brooke Shields. Also doesn't have any gray, hardly.
Hello, my name is Aisha Wendt, and I am here with my horse, Toro, who is a male golden retriever lab from GDB.
Hello, I'm Gwenda Castle from San Diego Chapter. Gee, it's the first time I've been told I haven't been talked alone. Usually I got a big mouth. Anyway, Glenda Castle from San Diego Chapter of California Council of the Blind, and I'm in the process of attempting to get a guide dog, and I'm here with my blind cane named Charlie.
Oh. Okay, there we go. Hi, I'm Adele Moeller, and I'm here with my guide Aloha from GDB. And what else am I going to say? Anyway, okay, and I'm from Fremont.
My name is Gloria Seves, and I am a cane user. Too bad.
Gloria Seves is next to me, and she's coming in place of Leslie. So Leslie's laying down having a nap right now. And anyway, she's a cane user. And you are from Sacramento?
Yes.
Okay.
There we go.
Hi. My name is Alice McGrath from San Mateo, and I am here with Cato, 6-year-old yellow lab from GDB, and he's my first guide dog.
Hi, everyone. It's Emily Simone, Guide Dogs for the Blind.
Hello again. It's Teresa Duncan with my guide dog, Dario.
Paula Barton with Darwin, GDB dog.
I'm Judy Wilkinson, and last Tuesday, my guide dog, Black Lab Terry, and I celebrated the 6th anniversary of the day I got him, and he's from the Seeing Eye.
Hi, can everyone hear me okay? I'm Nancy Younger from Riverside. I have Miguel from Guide Dogs of the Desert. He's a golden yellow cross. He'll be 4 years old on January 1st. I'm a recent addition to the Gaduck board. Thank you.
Happy New Year.
I'm Tim Hunt, and I don't have a guide dog. My partner does.
Hi, everybody. I'm Nellie Emerson, and I have a female German Shepherd named Wicker from Seeing Eye.
I'm Christy Crespin. I had Fila from 7 years ago, November 8th. She retired from GDA. I'm using Seymour while I'm waiting for Caroline, who is a Labradoodle, and I'm getting her from Guide Dogs of the Desert on Friday.
Oh, that's awesome.
I'm Ed Crespin, Christy's husband. I'm here to help her get out of retirement.
I'm Linda Fonseca, and I'm proudly to have Norman, my guide dog, for 3.5 years. That's a high watermark for me, because I had to retire my other dog early, 2.5 years of service. But anyway, high watermark for Norman. And I want to tip my hat to Emily Simone. I mean, she is a good person. Bye.
Hello, my name is Lorraine Foster. I have my second guide dog from Guide Dogs for the Blind, their campus in Oregon. His name is Skip. He's 3 years old.
Good afternoon. I'm Emily Goodland with Guide Dogs of the Desert.
Hi, everyone. I'm Linda Samolsky. I have my 3-year-old guide, Buster, but he's not with me today. He stayed home with the daddy so that the daddy could take care of him and my retired guide, Lexus. So I have Seymour with me today.
Hi, I'm Pat Wolf. I'm Pat Wolf from Devil City, and I have a dog with a mystery name because I won't know who the dog is for another month, and she will be from GDA.
Hi, I'm Tony Ames from Fresno, California, and I'm here with my 7.5-year-old golden retriever Keebler from Guide Dogs for the Blind, and Emily is wonderful, I agree, and I also have Ed's retired dog, Latrell, with me.
Hi, my name is Debbie Prieto, and I'm friends with Tony and Ed. So I brought her down.
Good afternoon. My name is Liv Presley, and I am a cane user, but I was very surprised when I received a call from Lily last week in the state office saying that I had won a ticket to the Guide Dog Users Luncheon from my registration, pre-registration. So here I am.
I'm Sherry Gabriel Sinanis, and I'm here. I have my guide dog, Golden Retriever, Bruce, from Guide Dogs of America. I've had him 3.5 years now. His work is exemplary. And by next spring convention, I will be completely back to Gabrielson.
And I'm Preston Moses. I'm just here in support of all my friends who are interested in getting dogs and everything. For myself, I still am raising Kane, and I find that my Kane is very able. So I'll just pass it on to the next person.
I'm Peter Crockle. I'm just here. I'm the Alameda, president of the Alameda chapter. And, yeah, I've got a Kane whose name is Kane. And just here with everybody. You can support the people who have the dogs and so forth. It's just great.
I'm Daryl Wilkerson, and I'm from the Alameda chapter. And I'm hoping to get a guide dog in the future. And I'm hoping it'll be very soon.
Hi, I'm Linda O'Neill with my black lab, Marilee, and we graduated October 3rd, and this is her first convention, and she's from Guide Dogs for the Blind in San Rafael.
Good afternoon. This is Richard Retha with Seen Eye Dog Handy, who will be 4 years old tomorrow.
David Childers from New Mexico. I don't have a guide dog yet.
Good afternoon. This is Linda Johnson, and I'm here with my golden retriever, who's beautiful. And her name is Renata, and she is 5, and I've had her for 3 years, and she's my third guide. GDB.
Hi, my name is Foster Brooks, and is this the Dean Martin roast?
Hey, Chuck.
This is Chuck Jordan, Guide Dogs America.
I'm Linda Hawes from Guide Dogs of America.
I'm Michael Moore. I'm here with my third guide dog, Cable, from Guiding Eyes for the Blind.
Hello again. This is Mark from Concord, California, with my third in a row GDA guide dog, Black Lab, Miss Beautiful Wendy.
Hi, my name is Penny Valdovinos. I'm here with my guide dog, Brenda. She's from the Seeing Eye. She's 6 years old. I've had her 4 years. It's our anniversary today. 4 years today. She's a golden retriever.
This is Brandy Morgan with my handsome three-year-old yellow lab, Eubanks, from the Guide Dogs for the Blind.
Hi, this is Beth Berenson, and I'm here because Rolo and Fancy are here. And I just joined, even though I don't have a dog, I just joined Guide Dogs, the Guide Dog Users group, because all my friends are Guide Dog Users, and I figured if I'm going to come to lunch with them, I should join.
We just want to pet the dog. I know, Beth.
Yeah,
This is Dave Jackson with Rolo. He'll be 3 years old. We're both from Guide Dogs for the Blind in San Rafael.
My name is Charlene Ornelas, and I have Whisper. And if people think I'm mispronouncing the name, I think it's the school's joke on me because my previous dog was Whistler. they say, you know, forget your other dog. Well, they sure made it easy on me. She is now 6 years old. I've had her for 4. And she's from Guide Dogs of America. And she is a Golden Retriever Black Lab Cross.
Hello, my name is Monique McCorley. And I'm a cane user from the San Diego Braille Club chapter.
I'm Diane Deutsch. I'm here with my yellow Labrador, Shayla Marie, who is 2.5. She's my second guide. She's from Guide Dogs for the Blind in Oregon.
All right. Sorry, I'm going to talk with my mouth full. And I'm Ann Kaiser, and I have female Black Lab Daytona. She just turned 7 a couple weeks ago, and she's my fourth dog. So without further ado, I think we will begin our guide dog school updates and reports. So who would like to go first? Who wants to go first, raise your hand, and we'll run a mic over to you.
Michael Moore is going first.
All right, Michael.
Hello, this is Michael Moore again. I'm representing Guiding Eyes for the Blind in Yorktown Heights, New York. And things are doing very well. We are just finishing up a class now, and we'll be starting our last class for the year shortly in November. And things are moving along. The renovations are, in fact, all done, and the place is beautiful. I was just there in July, and it's quite nice. The one new thing that we have put into place is home training for people who are not able to get to Guiding Eyes for either first-time users or repeat users. So, and that is new to us. And so I think that ends my update. Thank you.
Emily, you want it next? But you walk over and get it, and then walk over there and give it, then walk all the way back. No, let her walk. I'm liking this. But I would never speak in front of a beautiful young lady like you.
You have the microphone check. Thank you. Yeah, Chuck and I go way back. 20 plus years way back. He was actually the first instructor I ever met walking into Community Run at Guide Dogs for the Blind as a kennel assistant.
Yeah, but you stayed the same. He didn't.
Yeah, and that's all I'm going to say about that. Yeah, exactly. All right, hello. For those of you who don't know me, my name is Emily Simone. I am a field service manager with Guide Dogs for the Blind. I actually have a home field office here in the lovely, beautiful city of Fresno, California. So I've had the luxury of being here to assist everyone and to just come to this convention this time around, because normally you guys don't get in my neck of the woods. So I really enjoy having you all here greatly. I thought I'd give you guys some updated information about some of the big changes going on at Guide Dogs for the Blind. I'm sure some of you have heard some of the new innovative stuff that we're doing. And as you all know, we are certainly known, if nothing else, a very innovative school. So we're always looking at changing and improving the things that we're doing. Probably the biggest change recently that has come out that we've been trying to get the word out about is our varied service delivery training program. And that's fancy wording for basically we have officially, as of the start of January 2010, have eliminated the four-week class training for first-time students. What that means, obviously, as time rolls along, for those clients who may benefit from it, we obviously can look at that again and perhaps bring it back if a client, particular client, might need 4 full weeks. But in short, we are offering to every single applicant who is accepted to our program an opportunity to come to either a 3-week or 2-week training program for their first dog, and it's their choice. The way we're able to do this, in short, is we are basically shortening the student instructor class ratio. Historically, for first time 4-week training programs had a ratio of 4 students to 1 instructor. We have now narrowed that down. For a 3-week class, it will be 3 students to 1 instructor. Now that would be a training program, wouldn't it? And in the 2-week program we are offering, it's a 2-to-1 ratio, 1 instructor to 2 students. And so basically what we've done is eliminated all the downtime. All of the transporting, loading up on buses, going to the lounge, sitting around, waiting in the lounge for your turn, loading back up on the buses. Now we're able to really put a lot more focus on actual road time, instruction time, valuable time with you and your new dog, getting out there and learning things you need to learn instead of just waiting around for your turn. So that's basically the crux of the program. I will let you know at this point, the state of California is not allowing us to conduct a two-week training program for first-time students. And so those clients who are interested in a two-week program for the first dog would be going to our Oregon campus to complete that training. The other real advantage of this model that we're looking at is that we are offering more opportunities for students to come in to train. So we are offering more classes per year, and so that gives people more flexibility with their schedule to be able to come in. Oh, yeah. And the other big one is by doing this, we're eliminating double rooms. Everybody's going to have a single room when they come in. Yep. So we've done some trial programs already this summer. We have graduated new students and retrained students in both of these programs, and we've had incredibly positive feedback. I happen to have several first-time graduates from the two-week program in Oregon that are in my field territory, and I obviously was very curious to see how they felt, their comfort level, their confidence level leaving after 2 weeks, and without exception, they all raved about it. One was a brand-new mother. She never would have come to train for a dog because she was a new mom, but she felt she could get away for 2 weeks, and she now has a new black lab and is thrilled with it. And she felt very confident about it. She came out feeling like, you know, there wasn't anything that I came out feeling like I didn't know what I needed to know, and I felt great about it. And obviously, Guide Dog still provides transitional assistance to any client that does not feel confident going home after that amount of time. And obviously, we still have a generous field service staff that is available to help people in their home area long after they graduate with their new dog. I thought I'd give you a little more information about the Alumni Association. Teresa Duncan obviously coordinates our Alumni Association efforts. We are very proud of the work that we've done in this area to create these alumni chapters. Teresa informed me we have almost 15 chapters across the United States of guide dog users, and I wanted to just give you a highlight about the state chapters. We do have a Sacramento area chapter, and Ann Kaiser, of course, is the president of that. And Southern California, Ken Metz is the Southern California chapter president. And then, of course, your one and only president, Mary Beth Randall, is the president of the Guide Dog Handlers Always chapter.
Vice president.
Oh, sorry, vice president.
But she'll be president.
Yeah, it won't be long. She'll be president.
Hey, man, I'll gladly let her.
The Alumni Association is starting a speakers series that is going to be done through Talking Communities. And the first one is going to be a monthly series, lecture series. And the first one's going to be on November 19th. And you're welcome to call in. And it is going to be about all of the changes in our training program and class training and dog training program. And that is going to be discussed by Charles, Nathan, and Brad Hibbard on the 19th. So those of you who may be interested in attending that, you can email Teresa Duncan to get more information at tduncan@guidedogs.com. You may have heard we have just hired a brand new field manager in the Pacific Northwest. Her name is Carrie Skim. She is a longtime guide dog instructor at Guide Dogs of the Blind. She's been at Guide Dogs for about 13 years, I believe. And she is actually originally from the Seattle area. So she's going to be moving up there and starting her new position as field manager probably the first part of November. So that's pretty exciting news. Lastly, I thought it might be interesting to let you all know that Guide Dogs has a new breed of dog that we are going to be using. It is the three-quarters golden. So what we've done in the past is that when we do a crossbreeding with a lab and a golden, the litter of that mixing would all be neutered or spayed, and they would just all become guide dogs. We are now looking at some of those crossbreeds to actually become breeder dogs. So if you cross a purebred golden with a crossbreed, you get a three-fourths golden. And so I thought that might be kind of a fun tidbit for those of you who are always hankering for some. Yeah, that's a golden 75, right, Jim? But, you know, we're always hearing you guys want loving your golden retrievers, so we thought we would work on that one a little bit as well. So thank you all. I think that's about it in terms of the real big highlights. But I thank you so much for your time and for being here.
Hi, everyone. My name is Linda Simulski, and I'm the Student Services Coordinator for Guide Dogs of the Desert. And I brought my... Oh, thank you. Thank you. And I did bring my coworker, my friend, and my partner in crime, Emily Goodland. She's a mobility instructor for Guide Dogs of the Desert as well. And Bob wishes, you know, we're sorry we're not Bob. I know. Bob loves coming to the conventions because he loves seeing everybody, and, you know, he's such a people person, and everybody loves Bob, and Bob loves everyone, and he's really sorry he couldn't come. But tomorrow is we're starting another class, so he's really busy. And so we'll start tomorrow, and we'll have a class of retrains, and they'll graduate on the 15th of November of one, which is Christy Crespin. Yay! And we continue to have our small personalized classes. They're 3-to-1, a ratio of 3 students to 1 instructor. And we have 4 licensed instructors currently. And we're starting... One thing that's really working out well, because we do train people with special needs, we're starting to pre-match each dog to each student prior to training, so that the students will know, most of our students will know who they get before they come into class. And so that allows us to custom tailor the needs of a lot of our students prior to them coming into class. One of the other things that we're doing is we have a really good relationship with the Transportation Security Administration in the Palm Springs Airport. So we're doing a lot of our training at the airport, where we will go and take the dog teams through the security. And so that really works well, because a lot of people, you know, fly into the Palm Springs area or fly wherever, and so it's really cool to be able to take the dogs into the airport. As mentioned, we do... Emily is a O&M instructor, and so she's able to go in and help people get oriented to the campus. And as well, she's able to help people as, you know, they're crossing streets and doing things with orientation and mobility. She's also able to show them how to use the Trekker Breeze, so we're doing that as well. Let's see, what else? One of the things that we've implemented into our program, because we have a big area of lack of orientation and mobility and life skills in the Coachella Valley. So we've been able, Emily and I have been able to go and do a life skills program along with mobility to people who need it. Maybe they need some extra cooking, or maybe they need some extra mobility. And so we're able to kind of bridge a gap in the Coachella Valley. And then, let's see, what was the last thing? I'm sorry? Okay. And then, so I'm part of the life skills instructor part, with the cooking and the activities of daily living. And then the other part that I do of my job is follow up with students, help applicants through the process, and make sure that everything is running smoothly. So I'm going to turn it over to Emily, and she's going to fill you in on the second part of all the things that are happening at Guide Dogs of the Desert.
Thank you. Want to let you know that we've added a certified canine masseuse to our class curriculum. And he comes twice during the class, and the students are taught to give the bond building and stress relieving massages to their dogs. And you might already know, but we have a Prius that Toyota donated to us, and we use that with the training with the dogs, as well as team traffic training. And as some of you may have heard, Guide Dogs of the Desert is planning on moving from the hill in the middle of the Wind Belt to about 30 minutes southwest of our current site. This move should allow us to train more steadily all year long, as the weather is quite a challenge where we are currently at. We are currently in escrow on our current property, and if all works out well, but we all know how that goes, we should be in our new location March or April 2010. And we'll keep you updated as more details unfold. We do continue to provide in-home placements on a limited basis. Last year, we had our first all-veterans class, and we are committed to servicing our veterans with one class per year devoted to our heroes.
Yay!
We still continue to use labs and golden retrievers as a staple of our guides. However, we have had success with our crossbreeds. We have a few German shepherds in puppy homes, and we have partnered with Southeastern Guide Dog School in developing ours and their breeding program. They have donated an Aussie puppy, and we will be donating a black lab. We also continue to breed standard poodles for those individuals that have allergies to dogs or immediate family members that are allergic. And Guide Dogs of the Desert continues to be committed to servicing the needs of the blind community by providing guide dog training, life skills, and O&M training. Thank you. Any questions? And we're going to be moving to Hemet. Yeah, Hemet. Anyone else have questions?
Hi, this is Chuck from Guide Dogs of America. I went last because we don't have much to talk about. But does anybody in this room know Andy Caruso?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I wanted to kind of give you an update on her before I give you an update on the school, because she was out for a couple of months, and I got tired of answering the phone calls going, "How's Andy?" Andy's fine. Andy's back, but she's working a kind of an abbreviated week. She's working Tuesday, Wednesdays, and Thursdays. And she had some surgery, but everything came out really good. It was sudden, but she's good, and she sends her love to everyone because she used to come up to these conventions, but it just really wasn't worth it. So I'll let her know that everybody was up here kicking and partying and having a good time. Okay, but Andy's great. In 2009, we had 42 teams graduate in the classes and in homes. But hold the music. We have one more to graduate. We have a in-home that will be starting on the 30th and completing shortly thereafter, which will give us a total of 43 graduates this year. Our annual projected goal is 50, but we're more concerned with quality teams than hitting that goal. But we did have some other things that kind of held out getting closer to the goal this year. We had four blindfold experiences this year. We had three apprentices go through the 10-day mandatory, by our school anyway, 24-hour day under blindfold, getting issued a dog training experience. The fourth experience was a 5-day blindfold experience, which everyone should know, since we had such a nice discussion earlier today, that Antoinette Sorek, the state executive officer of Guide Dog Board, volunteered to come and go through the same 24-hour day, blindfold experience, and did an excellent job, and I think actually understands a lot more. No one on the state board at that level had ever done that before, so we were very pleased that she did it. It was a very moving experience. I've never seen anybody cry as much as when she gave that dog up as she did. I said, "I'm sorry, you aren't blind. You can't take the dog home." Patty Elizondo, some of you from GDA probably know, achieved her licensure in July, and so she's a fully licensed instructor now. Guide Dogs of America started something this year that we will continue on. Does everybody in California remember how hot July and August was? Our class in July, I don't think there was a single day that it was less than 105. I mean, it was horrible. And We started something new because it was almost virtually impossible for the teams to work on the streets because of the heat. So we got real busy and we ordered, overnighted, this rough wear footwear that's out now. And we went through this rapid, accelerated training process of getting the dogs used to them. And that was kind of comical because these dogs had never seen footwear before. And so we were doing a lot of training and working on that, and the students were learning how to put them on and off and have them on where they would stay on. But it was interesting, as soon as they walked out of the dorm and walked on the pavement and they were doing all the weird foot lifting and all the, you know, the teenage, you know, spastic behavior that they do with feet, as soon as their feet didn't burn, they went, oh, this is a good thing. And so we have now made it a policy that all classes will be issued the footwear and taught how to use it. We are now actually working the dogs in footwear so that hopefully by class the students don't have to go through the hijinks that the July class did, although I think they enjoyed it, if you want to know the truth. We had our partners dinner recently, and we did a kind of a fund for cause thing, and so we put up this footwear thing that for funding for us, and we did Linda brought a dog up, and we did a film with this Yellow Lab male putting the footwear on and watching all the funny stuff, and we put up what it would cost us to fund 10 students in each class. And of course, my boss thought, well, that'll never go. Well, we now have enough money donated that one evening to provide footwear for 4 classes a year for the next 5 years. So it was a hit. Let's see, what else? Oh, I do have some news for GDA graduates. Mr. Jay Borman, who has been the president of GDA for the last 11 years, is retiring as of December the 31st. Jay has been an outstanding president for GDA. He's brought in a lot of things. He's built up our reserves. You know, financially, we're in a much stronger place than we were 11 years ago when he came aboard. He's done a lot of stuff on the facilities and the campus and vehicles. We're going to miss Jay tremendously, but he's ready to retire. We have a new person in place that will take over officially on January the 1st, but he's been shadowing Jay here again with GDA's affiliation with the International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers. Our president is an executive from the union, you know, on loan, because they pay all of his expenses, his salaries, and everything else, and will be running. And his name is Dale Hartford, and I've met him. He's an outstanding guy. He has been a supporter of GDA for over 25 years through the union affiliation. And the interesting thing, and we're kind of kidding him a little bit about it, is I don't know if everybody knows, but Jay didn't like dogs. John Pettit, the president before Jay, didn't like dogs. And Bud Melvin, the president before John Pettit, didn't like dogs. Dale not only likes them, he has one. So I think we're in real good shape there, and I think GDA looks forward to being very progressive and moving forward. All the schools, I think, throughout the United States, like everything else and all economies, has been suffering the last couple of years, and it's gotten pretty bad this last year. I'm happy to announce that GDA, although we're not hitting our 100% on all of our fundraisers like we like, Jay and Dale have taken the attitude, we just have to work harder, we have to have more events. And so our revenue, although it's not going up like it was for a few years, it's not going down. We've kind of hit flat. So right now, flat is good, you know, because I know a lot of organizations have seen a serious drop off of revenues, and we're all having to be very careful about hours and employees and positions and stuff of that nature. But all the schools, I'm sure, like our school, is going to do everything we can to stay in business, to provide the service that we provide to the people that we serve. Thank you very much, and it's good to see all of you.
Well, that's great. All these schools are awesome. I've said this before, and I'll say it again. I wish I could clone myself and go to all all of them, because they're all just doing excellent jobs. I'm so impressed with all of you. Let's give them all a huge round of applause. All right, well, everyone, this has been a really great time today. I want to thank everyone for coming. I've enjoyed being your president for the past 5 years, but I'm turning the reins over to Mary Beth, so she'll be doing this. And so thank you, everyone, and have a great rest of the convention. Love you all. Bye.